You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends.
Retro Recall.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Wastelanders and Vault Dwellers, welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. We are taking on episode 5 of season 1 of the Fallout TV show, The Past. And when I say we, I've got John back with me again. John, welcome back. Are you excited to talk more Fallout?
I'm always excited to talk more Fallout. It's funny because the more Fallout I talk, the more Fallout I want to talk.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, going back through these episodes has been super fun for me because I'm noticing a little bit of things that I didn't before. I'm digging back into it. And you and I were discussing in the pre-show that the new trailer dropped for season 2. Yeah. Do we want to just talk about that real fast before we get into episode 5? Because you called out something on a previous episode that you and I did, where you said it would be really cool if Marcus shows up.
Yeah.
And then in the trailer, we get this dark screen and a deep voice talking about needing friends. And you and I just got on this call to start recording, and you were like, hey, Tom, Marcus is coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's Marcus. I mean, that is 100% Marcus. I mean, and that is, I'll be honest, they kind of had to do that. Because if you're a Fallout fan, Marcus is in Fallout 2 and Fallout New Vegas. He's right. Critical in both of those games.
Right.
So it's such a great homage going back. It also allows you to introduce super mutants. I mean, the way I look at the next season is, and you saw this with, I think, a little bit of Lord of the Rings, actually jumped a little into the detail a bit earlier, but like Wheel of Time was going this one, a lot of those ones where the first season is designed to set up more of the common folk for it. Hey, here's a cool show. We'll do some homages to the players just to broaden our audience as much as possible and get them in. And then usually in the second season, that's when you drop all the stuff. It's like, hey, right. Now we're going to go deep into this. We're going to make this amazing game. Well, sorry, game. This amazing show.
This show out of a game.
Really and really show off the game. So, I mean, think about what did we see? What did we see in that trailer? We've got Deathclaw.
Yes.
We've got Marcus.
Right.
We've got Rad Roaches.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, no, yeah. Rad Scorpions.
Rad Scorpions and Rad Roaches do show up. Mm-hmm. The chicken.
We've got
chicken lovers dealing with some of those.
Yep.
But yeah, just like season one.
Mr.
Yeah.
House. We've got the Mr. Cowboy. I forgot that name.
Cooper as the ghoul.
Yep. Well, I'm saying the robot when it puts the the robot when it puts on the cowboy hat, like in the in. Whatever.
Right.
I forgot it.
The Securitron.
Name. Yeah. The Securitron. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Oh, so there's a few different Securitrons, right? But I don't know which one it is because they can all change their faces.
Yeah. But I remember in New Vegas, there was, if you pissed off, you did something to one of the Securitrons, and it would have on, it was the Howdy partner one became very, very violent.
Right. So there's Man, and then there's a few others. And So, that's a big question for me is, which, is this just a general Securitron? Is this Yes Man? Is this like, what is going on there with that? Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. But there was also a hooded cloaked character backlit. Mm-hmm. It looks kind of big, and I don't.
Deathclaw.
You think it's a hooded Deathclaw? You think it's?
I think.
What was the name of the companion in Fallout 2? That was the Deathclaw.
That's what I'm trying to remember. One. The companion in Fallout 2. That's what my main thought.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be. I don't know. That also could be Marcus. In all candor,
it could
I don't
be
know
Marcus. Goris. Goris was his name. Goris.
Yes.
Yes.
Who knows how far they want to go with that? Because the problem is that Deathclaw. Is that the last time we had a friendly Deathclaw? Was it Fallout 2?
There are some that have been tamed, but not intelligent and friendly that I recall at all across anything after that. So, So I mean, it would be cool to get Goris. I mean, so here's the other thing is that if you are introducing super mutants with a super mutant who is more rational, friendly, and very different from most of the super mutants, even there's different types of super mutants, but different from most of them in a very specific kind of way, then why not also introduce the idea that some Deathclaws aren't just, you know, monsters also?
Oh, yeah. My viewpoint is more, it might just be a bit much in eight episodes.
Unless it's kind of a hidden character behind the scenes that doesn't really get revealed further until season three. What if it's somebody else working in the shadows, doing something? I mean, who knows, right? This could go all sorts of different directions. But yeah, lots of fun reveals in the trailer.
The character, the Camille Nanjiani character, is that the guy from Fallout 4, you think?
So a lot of people are speculating that that's Nate, your character, the male character you can play as in Fallout 4. I don't think it is, because Nate comes across very sincere in his dialogue. I mean, Fallout 4 is the only one where your character has his own dialogue. He comes across very sincere. He can make jokes and things, but he tends to be very vanilla because he's still a conduit for the player. Camille Nanjiani is he's a charismatic, humorous, kind of aloof kind of guy. He plays those kinds of roles.
Yeah.
The personality doesn't quite match for me.
Well, I thought it was Arthur Maxon.
Well, I don't know that he doesn't really look like Maxon either, because he's missing a scar on his eye. He has a similar jacket. He has similar hair. He has less facial hair, and he doesn't have a scar across his right cheek.
But that's something. The rest of it, it's the same.
It's the personality thing, right? Like Roger Maxon is stoic. He does not crack jokes. Yeah. He's super serious. And why would you cast that kind of actor for that kind of role? It doesn't line up. I think the best possibility for him is that he is an important character. Maybe he's a pilot. That's why he gets that jacket. Maybe he's a leader of a faction who shows up to just kind of check in and see what's going on or something like that. But I don't think he's a character we've met before or played as. That's my speculation. I could be wrong.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you're fine. I was thinking, is it the boomers? No, but
I don't think it's the boomers.
It's not the boomers.
Probably not the boomers. Lots of questions still for that. But hey, are you ready to dive into episode five?
Let's do what we came here to do.
Let's do it. And listeners, if you have thoughts on the trailer, if you have thoughts on any of the stuff that comes up in today's episode, please comment. Let us know your thoughts, because we're open to all sorts of interpretations on these things, and even interpreting things that happened in season one and how those things are going to progress, or if they have a specific meaning or a specific reference that doesn't come up in today's episode. We're not going to hit everything, of course. So feel free to chime in and let us know what you think. All right. Episode five is called The Past. And the first scene opens up with Maximus and Thaddeus, and they're celebrating getting the head. It's laid out. Thaddeus asks to be branded. Maximus decides that he needs to tell him something. He says, probably something I should tell you. And then Thaddeus responds, they'll kill you. It's the Brotherhood. They'll find out. He pulls out the fusion core and leaves him stuck there. What did you think about this scene?
So this is one of the things I wasn't a huge fan of, if I'm being honest, because Thaddeus annoys me. Just can't do it.
He's kind of a doof, right? Like
he annoys me. The thing of the scene I did like was I thought he did a good job of showing kind of the youth of the Brotherhood. The whole idea when we get through the Brotherhood, if you get, especially through the games, is that it starts off with, in Fallout 1, Fallout 2, is being this like kind of older noble knights, all that stuff. And then as we get further, especially in the Fallout 4, you see a lot more of the flux in there. And I think what these two showed
later generations,
especially with, like, I mean, they're both they're young guys,
and
and the idea is that as a squire, this is kind of what they're just so in the moment. And we see more of this in Thaddeus, more in episode 6, kind of where things come in, we're like, oh, these people are just kind of, they're stuck in the moment at all times,
right?
They don't
right.
really understand, because the Brotherhood isn't teaching them all of this stuff. The Brotherhood is making them just soldiers,
right?
So
Yeah, I also think this scene is key in reinforcing, like you mentioned, season one is all about bringing people into the world. What is the world like? It not only explains, okay, these suits are powered by fusion cores. Many other things can be powered by fusion cores. It solves that question. How would you power something like this in the future? Well, there's fusion cores and they still have power in them. But it also reinforces the dangers of being alone in the wasteland. Like, the entire show is about individuals who have a hard time trusting each other in a world where they have to trust each other to survive. And that's what this does. This leads us into the next scene where Maximus is stuck in the armor. There's these giant rad roaches that are coming in. Lucy shows up. She shoots them. We have music that plays. I'm going to point out some of the songs again. This is Robin in the Pine by Bonnie Guitar. Some of the lyrics include, there's a robin singing in the old pine tree. Spring is coming over the hills. In a nest for two, you'll find two eggs of blue. Papa Robin's all a thrill. It's all about mating. Settle down. This is foreshadowing a potential romantic connection between the two, which gets played up a bit through the second half of the season, right? Now, Lucy opens the face mask. Lucy says, I'm looking for the man's head. She throws up. She has radiation poisoning. Maximus, she asks Maximus's name. He says, I'm Knight Titus. He lies to her. Mm-hmm. Great way to start a relationship, lying to each other, but he's still pretending to be someone he isn't. And then Lucy mentions in the scene, T-60 power armor, the Battle of Anchorage, the tempered lining, the fact that this one is different from the previous ones because it's tempered lining, and then she passes out. And that's basically the scene.
Yeah. Well, I also did like the rad roaches. It's something about, as anyone who's played this game enough knows, those things are annoying as hell and they come out of nowhere. So I did like that they brought in the rad roaches. Like, okay,
yeah,
those things are...
I love how they fall over. I love how they're super ungainly and uncoordinated.
Yes,
kind of like real roaches, but if they were like 20 pounds, they wouldn't be able to move around very well.
That was my thought, because they're gigantic. Of course, you know, how else would they be?
Right, they're bigger than my dog. I mean, they've got to be at least 15, 20 pounds, right? there's that scene, and then we go back to the vaults with Norm, and this episode and the next episode is very Norm centric. I mean, the whole rest of this, Norm has his own arc, and he becomes a main character. By the end of this season, he was one of my favorite characters. He really grew on me.
Well, because Norm was the one who was actually kind of, I think for those of us who played the game, pushing the mystery forward.
Yes.
Norm is the one who's sitting there giving us those answers we've all been looking for, of like, all right, what is the interpretation in this version of Fallout of the vaults themselves?
Right.
Because you always get little bits, obviously. You're always going to get little changes, yada, yada. But I really did like that in Norm's character, exploring the vaults, you know, looking up his mom's Pip-Boy, all these things becomes huge.
Right, right. So they go into Vault 31. There's blood on the wall. We know what is in there. Betty catches them on the way back out, right? And she says, where have you been? And he says, planting tatoes. And it wasn't a good answer because it definitely didn't look like they'd been planting tatoes. But we got another reference to tatoes, another Fallout-y thing, right? So that's pretty cool. And this is building up that tension between Betty and Norm. And it's not just explaining to us that Norm is curious and gaining his courage. He's seen himself as a coward, an aimless kind of individual who now has a purpose and is learning that he is more capable than he thinks. And we also are slowly discovering that Betty is more than we thought. So that's kind of unraveling here, right? So then we go back to Max and Lucy. She wakes back up. Maximus thought the vaults held monsters. He says something about the vaults. I thought the vaults held monsters, which is a funny comment to me because sometimes that is true. Sometimes they literally have monsters in them, and sometimes they have humans. Vault Tech, you could say, is a monster in its own right. Right? So he's basically true. Like, that statement is basically true almost all of the time. There are monsters in the vaults. They're just different kinds of monsters, depending on which vault you go in. Lucy says, I have a tracker that'll lead to that head. Let's travel together, get the head back, and then you can lend me some knights to save my father, right? And of course, he's like, yeah, sure, because what else is he going to say? Like, and I love her naive expectation. You can lend me like 4 or 5 knights in armor to come save my father because they have nothing better to do. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, well, I mean... Lucy's still, that's the whole, that's the, this again, Lucy is playing the vault really well. And I think back again, my big thing on this show is I'm not necessarily looking for like Fallout 5 out of the show in the sense that, hey, let's push the narrative along. The cup. I want to play Fallout. What I like is them taking all these games, giving me homages to them and kind of taking a different swing at it.
Right.
When I look at Lucy, I'm reminded of Fallout 3. Where you're growing up in the vault.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you know, you're super naive when you leave 101. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and then when you go back to 101, right. You know, and the whole place is kind of falling apart. There's, I really like that element. And I think they're doing a good job of kind of bringing that in here.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also another, this is another, I've got these little highlighted sections in my notes where I'm like, this is something that I didn't consider the first time. So her naivety is obvious, right? That's who her character is. She's been stuck in a vault and they keep on reinforcing that with her response because that's who she is. But there's a side benefit. It seems like it's a major drawback, but there's actually a benefit into that because it seems to inspire Maximus that there is a better world. A better world is possible. That the idea of living in a place where people get along, where they have plenty to eat, where they survive, they don't have to worry about the wasteland, is a possibility. And you can kind of see that seed of an idea planted in him in this scene, and it continues to develop from there. That's part of why he's enamored with her, is she represents the thing that he has always wanted, but never believed was possible, even though she's naive. So that's how that hits me. So
I mean, I don't disagree. I just, my thing, I'm more focusing with her on the source of the naivety is what I really like. It's like, again, the whole thing of like, tell me about what's happened over the last,
200 years.
I know everything before that because she does.
Right.
But the last 200 history, are a little bit fuzzy.
Yeah. That part's great. Well, that's coming up. But let's go to the next scene. We've got Vault 33, Norm. It's voting time. Betty versus Reg versus Woody. We all know Reg and Woody don't have a chance. The song that's played in this scene is Battle Hymn of the Republic, which feels both super poignant because they believe that they are the future of America, but also similarly naive, right? To like Lucy's perspective here. Like, you guys can barely mount a political campaign in a vault full of just a few hundred people or however many people are in that vault. You're the future of America, you know? Like, come on. So, and then the scene has Davey feeling awkward, not voting for Reg. And then we get the reveal that Betty's been an overseer before. Reg ends up voting for Betty because he doesn't even believe in himself. What did you think?
Well, it's a couple things I loved about this. First off, I did like the guy who just over-explained himself.
Yes.
Where he's like, you know, this, like, so I'm just not going to vote for you. Like, yeah, man, I know. Like,
yeah, this is
you
Davey.
You didn't need to spend 45 minutes telling me.
Right.
I could tell. I did like his whole thing of, I also am not going to vote for me.
Right. It shows how they all understand how not just naive, but not capable they are. They've never had to surmount any difficulties in their life. So they're all kind of just lame. I think that's really what that's pushing, right?
So this scene, I'll be honest, didn't make a lot of sense till we get further into the show. Because you kind of sit there saying, hey, is this entire vault idiots? Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. But then as we get further into the show, I mean, look, we've all seen this, we can reveal a little bit, and we discover the origins of Vault 31.
Right.
It all has to make sense that this is intentional.
They've been kept weak. So that they can't mount a response. They can't rise up. They can't. And it's on purpose. And that's my highlighted note for this scene. This shows how much of a subconscious grip the Enclave has over the people of the Vault's perspective. Everything that they've done in this vault has been on purpose to keep them down and to maintain the, not just their perspective about the way the world works and doing this for the future of America, but also this doubt in their own abilities, because everything, it's like raising kids in a wealthy household and not giving them challenges to overcome. They end up going out into the world and just failing because everything was too easy for them. Their parents just gave them everything they wanted, right?
Yeah, no. Totally. 100%. Yep.
Yeah. So I thought that, like, even though these little scenes are just feel like little character details, there's always more going on. And I find that so interesting. So we're back to Lucy and Max walking down the railway. Lucy's unaware of what happened the last 200 years. This is that conversation.
I love
right?
this scene.
Yeah. Max thinks the bombs fell when he was a kid, which is also hilarious. He's equally as ignorant, just in different ways.
Well, he's not wrong, though.
Yes.
That's the
problem. A bomb dropped when he was a kid, but it wasn't the bombs. So maybe he's answering a different question, or maybe he's conflating the two things together. And then Lucy,
he's not educated to know. So that's his whole thing of like, no, I saw this happen. He doesn't understand.
Right.
No, there's a lot more.
He was so young in those scenes where we flash back. No wonder he thought that was the end of the world, because that's what it felt like.
Exactly, and
he wasn't educated. Lucy also has memories of being outside with her mom, and at first we think, oh, that was the simulated sun inside the vault, but we later find out that no, she was actually outside. And again, it mirrors Maximus. She is as ignorant as he is to the events of when she was a child. And both 100%. Of them are misunderstanding what their childhood was and what was happening around them, which is all so poetic. Two things happening together, different problems, same perspective, or different perspective, same issue. I don't know however you want to say that. Then we get back to Vault 33 with Norm. He's checking the overseer elections. He finds out that all the overseers are originally from Vault 31. This seems suspicious. Betty gets a 98% majority. I have to wonder who didn't vote for her.
Yes.
who was like picking the other candidate? And then there's this awkward congratulations from Norm, and they kind of like stare each other down in front of the Jell-O cake thing. I love how Jell-O's all over the place.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, it's easy to produce. That's the whole thing. But I also get a huge kick out of it.
It's also retro. Like, there was a big trend in like the 60s and 50s or something where everyone was like, Jell-O's the new dessert. Everybody should eat Jell-O.
Well, yeah, Jell-O came out. Gelatin came out in I think it was the 50s. And it became, that's where the Jell-O molds come from with the pretzels in them and that whole thing. It was an era of food.
It's food adjacent almost.
Heavy air quotes.
Heavy air quotes.
But yeah.
All right. So then we get to a more interesting scene, at least adventure wise. Lucy and Max are still walking. They come across two people. They're trying to cross this bridge the railroad goes over. We have this thing where they ask if they're armed. Maximus lies. They hold up their hands. The song that's playing here is Ladyfingers by Herb Alpert's Tijuana Brass. This feels intentional because it feels like a Western, almost Mexican influenced kind of, you know, which is a different song, but it feels kind of like that, right? This feels like this is a Mexican standoff of sorts in a way.
This scene is so reminiscent. The scene actually kind of upset me a little bit because it reminded me of what Fallout 3 really was. Fallout 3 was, I think, they did this best, where you would go somewhere and people were just kind of evil. For lack of a better phrase, you'd stumble across. You still get it a little bit in New Vegas, but I just didn't find as much in Fallout 4. Fallout 4, you tend to find like ghouls. Whereas I like this idea of people, heavy air quotes, trying to survive. Heavy air quotes there. Uh-huh. But in their attempts to survive, they're just murderers for each other. So I love this scene.
Maximus calls it out. These are fiends. These are the fiends, just like from New Vegas. I believe that was New Vegas, right? They were in the Mojave. That's right. And so these are fiends. Like they're constantly on drugs. They eat people. They're terrible. And I love the tight zooms, the way that this is portrayed. You've got like the Pip-Boy and then the bad teeth and then the clear eyes on Lucy. Right. And you can see how they're all kind of sizing each other up, reading. And from when I first watched this, from Lucy and Maximus' perspective, it was, I was focusing on these other two going,
right.
Oh boy. Okay. I know what's going on here. These are not just even just raiders. These are fiends. This is messed up. But then when you see it through the other perspective, you see the clear eyes, you see Lucy's good complexion. Mm-hmm. She looks more clean than they do. And you can see from their perspective that they're going, this is an easy catch. These people don't know what's going on. We can take them.
Yeah. Well, and that's what the whole concept, like, are you armed? Of course, I'm not armed. It's just that whole back and forth. But it is. This was the whole purpose of so many post-apocalyptic games, is you're trying to survive. And it's not, and you're actually most at danger while traveling.
Right.
That's where you're at most risk, because there's no one around you. People like this, if you get into like the city Philly that the ghouls shot up, or, you know, New Vegas, you know, we go there.
Sure.
You can have law and order, but trying to get from one spot to the next.
Right.
Nope.
Right. Out in the wilderness, which is, I like to draw historical comparisons. It's still like that in many places in the world. Whereas as soon as you are away from any civilized area, your safety is much, much reduced. And for most of human history, it would have until the 20th century, in most environments, it was almost impossible for a woman to go somewhere by herself due to danger, you know, like, and a man by himself, if not accompanied by at least one other person, also not advised, you know, like, just in general. And it's so crazy that today, like, my wife just went out to go work out. Like, she's going out. It's the evening. It's dark out. And I'm like, you know, just be careful, but you should be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know? Like, why would that be an issue? It's kind of the viewpoint there.
Right.
Of course it's fine. Like, oh yeah, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So Vault 33, we're back in Vault 33. Woody's looking at his poster. He says, I put 10 posters up, as if that was a great feat of effort. That was a lot of work for poor Woody to put up 10 posters. Davey says, when things look glum, vote for someone from Vault 31. And, oh man, it's such a good saying, you know? And it just, again, another scene that kind of reinforces the fact that Vault Tech is keeping all of them feeble and incapable, too safe. Right.
Yeah. And I think that the whole thing about the election is it's that chintzy, you know, we're going to have a rhyme. We're going to have this. It's an homage back to American elections in the 50s and 60s. Actually, that was the whole thing. Yeah. Like, I like Ike.
Ike Eisenhower was the one that comes to mind for me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's those types of little things. There was a couple in the 60s whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, but that style, again, really clever homage, because that's what Fallout's meant to be. Fallout's always been this game where it's like, wait, what year did this happen? And that was kind of the whole idea, is it's like society advanced, you know, obviously at the fall, you don't have the racism, you don't have all the stuff you get, like, we think of like the 50s in the US, but the idea was that the rest of society didn't really move forward.
Yes.
And that's what makes it kind of fun.
Yeah. And the elections show that, because they're still using similar methods for their elections. Yeah. Then we get to the scene with Norm, Chet, and the baby. Isn't it weird? We keep voting for Vault 31 overseers, Norm says. And then we find out, that's where we find out Steph's from Vault 31. She also is on the inside.
Yes.
And that all of a sudden completely can change our perspective on her, because we're going, oh, you know, like, okay.
Well, not yet. Maybe you did, but for me, I didn't shift my, I was like, okay, she's from 31. I didn't realize the importance of 31 until much later.
Right. But it did lend a certain air of suspiciousness, especially because she's already established Chet as her new baby daddy, you know? So,
yes.
So she's manipulative. That's you know, we got enough of that.
Tell.
Maybe she's more than just, you know, personally manipulative. Maybe she's part of a group that's manipulating everybody, right? That would be a very different thing. And then the Norm says, how's Vault 31 different from here? And she replies, what did your dad tell you? Tactical response, right? And he said, mashed potatoes are a little bit better. That's what my dad used to say. And then and she's like, yep, basically, like, agreed with that. Like, that's the company line about what you're supposed to, like, don't give away anything. Just give a fun response and move on, because nobody really cares. But
exactly.
Norm cares, right? So a little more hints about what's going on.
You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and fleet services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Then we get back to Lucy and Max, and now they're at the Shady Sands sign. There's a big billboard. It says, yep, first capital of the NCR. Notice, and this is something I noticed going back, because people got so upset about Shady Sands being slightly in the wrong location. It's a little bit closer to the city than it should be. Also, a lot of debate online happened where people were like, well, if you blow up the capital of a country, how can they continue fighting? The NCR must be dead and all gone. And it's like, that's not 100% the case.
Yeah, no, that's not true. I mean, I'm sorry, just... Well, this could be true in your opinion, but your opinion's wrong.
Yeah, I don't think that, like, you blow up one capital, and if there are enough people who are still fighting, they make a new capital.
Well, the NCR, that's the thing. The NCR wasn't, it's not like the enclave. Even the enclave might not work as well, because there's no, like, main ruling party. It's like, if you blow up the NCR, okay, so you take out Shady Sands, fine, Shady Sands is gone. Well, Tandy's long dead, but still, that's, you're just picking out, you're making them harder to function. But they can still easily exist, because it's New California Republic. It's meant to be a grassroots campaign of, like, almost militia who are rising up to stand up for the wasteland and kind of, you know, the difference has always been, like, the enclave wants to rule. The Brotherhood wants to pacify the wasteland. Again, I'm a big NCR person. The NCR always, like, they're trying to uplift the wasteland. They're trying to turn the wasteland not into a wasteland, but to actually say, hey, maybe you can make something better out of this.
Right, right. They're trying to go back to
Caesar's Legion hated them.
Right, democratic and republic ideals. And a lot of people push back. A lot of very strong, opinionated New Vegas fans push back against the NCR, because they go, look at all the evidence from New Vegas that shows that they are incapable, they are corrupt, and they're falling apart. And they're not wrong about that. But how many times have we seen republics or democratic style systems go through periods with high corruption where they start to become less effective? And then, due to some sort of situation, whether it's war or a depression or something like that, they rally, a new party takes hold, and the laws change, things change, and they're able to bring themselves back from a place that was terrible. That happened. That's part of the resilience of a republic kind of system.
Exactly.
So just because you lose one capital doesn't mean they're done. There are probably other major settlements at this point, and some of them are going to become leaders naturally, because they're going to rise up and do the things that the Shady Sands would have been doing. So that makes sense. And we get a date on this, established 2142. This is interesting to me, because this is not a billboard that was, or the sign on the billboard was not created pre-war. This was post-war. This is showing us how capable the NCR was to actually do things like build back things from the old world, a gigantic sign that talks about their location, and now you're approaching it. Later on in the vaults, we see images of drawings of Shady Sands and on the chalkboard, right? And we have pictures of them, and even in flashbacks, of them revitalizing old world buildings so that they looked clean and nice again. We're seeing, like, we've seen glimpses of Shady Sands in the games becoming revitalized, but by the time that that place got bombed, it was functional in a very similar way to the world before the bombs dropped. It was one little isolated thing, but it was moving in that direction.
Well, Shady Sands, again, I mean, I'm going back to Fallout 2. Shady Sands was, I mean, this is when you had President Tandy, who's long gone at this point. Shady Sands was a major settlement. It was actually, it was that them and Vault City were basically at war, and Vault City was a vault, which I also kind of wonder, you know, if we're going to see Vault, we won't see Vault City, but I was kind of hoping to see Vault City.
It would be cool.
Yeah, but it's too far north from Shady Sands.
Yeah. So who knows? But maybe not in the next season, but maybe in a future season. Who knows where they go after season two?
There's so much they can do with this.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. But one of my favorite scenes here, though, is when Thaddeus reveals that he survived the explosion, right? And he gets out, and he sees the power armor just kind of standing there above him. It's a big question, because that was that moment where he said, well, I survived the bombs. Okay, well, that can't have been the apocalypse, because I don't think there were just random power armor wandering around. So it becomes this piece of it. So then you realize, oh no, that's how he ended up in the Brotherhood. The Brotherhood was there, yeah, when it blew up.
Right.
And this is a nice kind of question mark of like, well, wait, what's going on? I also did like, by the way, that he was hiding in one of the refrigerators.
Yes.
Because I think that's again, that comes up a good amount in the Fallout games where you find someone inside like one of the refrigerators.
Yes.
Which is an old homage to like hiding under the ways you would hide from nuclear fallout. So
right, I digress, right. Though. It also gets used in Indiana Jones, strangely enough, which is ridiculous.
It's a very common idea of like, well, the plating you have on your refrigerator is so heavy it could stop an atom bomb or radiation.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure, I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the Mythbusters did a thing about this and you were very dead. Someone someone did something about this, about hiding in a refrigerator to stop, you know, to save you from an explosion. And yes, the refrigerator would survive, but the problem is you would be shaken around inside of it so violently.
Oh, absolutely.
That you would not.
Yeah. That's why the scene in Indiana Jones is so funny, is because that thing just like gets tossed into the air and rolls, and there is no cushioning inside that thing. You would be mush by the time that door opened. Yeah.
No.
I used to work in packaging. I know how little effort it takes to ruin the things inside a box if you don't put enough foam and packaging materials in there. Like, I did this for a living. Yeah, no, you would be mush. So let's continue on with the scene. Lucy in the scene mentions Reclamation Day, which is brought up in Fallout 76 a lot.
Yes.
So that's interesting. Yes. This idea that they are under that same ideology, that same concept of like, well, we're supposed to go back out into the wasteland and save everybody. Well,
they call it Reclamation Day, I think it's in 76, but it's been around for a while. Because I mean, Fallout 1, the whole idea is that when you get back, they won't let you back in because they're not ready to open the doors yet.
Right.
It hasn't been this thing. Now in Fallout 3, then we get more of kind of what it turns out I think we may have going on here, where the vault has been opened and then been closed. I think that was also in Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, but even the vault in Fallout 1 was opened and closed a few times, but most of the inhabitants didn't know that. Like, they kept it.
Yeah, learn that later. Vault 101.
So and they play with this too, because some of the vaults get messages that say it's time for Reclamation Day, and then they open up. But a lot of the vaults don't. So the underlying assumption is that notification would go out to everyone at the same time. But that's not necessarily the case. And in fact, in a lot of these vaults, there will never be Reclamation Day. They're not ever planning to open up the vaults. So it's particular to each of the vaults, which is interesting. But this is what she believes, right? And then there's questions about like, well, and the idea that like, we're going to restart civilization, as if that's not already trying to happen out on the surface and has been happening for 200 years now. And then the question of like, it already happened without us. And then Maximus says it didn't work out, which is hilarious because all that stuff, you know, connects to him having been on the surface and his, you know, getting bombed and barely surviving and all of that.
Well, that becomes the whole thing though, is it's like, we're not ready yet. And the whole I love this whole thing. Again, I'm going to doing the homages when, you know, you're in Fallout 3 and you're learning in the classroom.
Yeah. Right.
It's that same. That's what this felt like again. It's like, well, all this has a purpose. Well, what's the purpose? Purpose.
Well, you know, it's our purpose. And then in this case, we're going to restart civilization. Yeah. So we see Shady Sands as a hole in the ground. It's the same thing that always happens, Maximus says. Everyone wants to save the world. They just disagree on how, which I think is a brilliant line. Because that's
it's a very good line.
That sums up every Fallout game, every faction, every individual that you meet. Everyone has a different idea about the way this is supposed to happen. Lucy says, I wonder if anyone survived. Maximus says, I did, implying that he was at this specific location. This was the place, right? And his wound is starting to get worse here. Then we move on to the evening. They find the medical lab. I double checked this. Hawthorne Medical Lab does not show up in any of the games. I believe this is only a TV location.
Yeah, I was not sure.
Okay. Yeah. There's a few of these things that I didn't go back and double check the first time I watched. Now I was curious. I was like, does Hawthorne, is that an actual place? Did that show up somewhere? And I just don't remember it. No, it's only in the TV show. This is a brand new location, which makes sense because there's a vault under it. If this had shown up in one of the games, we probably would have known about that vault because why not have the vault there too? You're making a game.
Yeah.
So it's the evening. They go into the lab. Maximus warns that there could be anything in there. Lucy goes in. The building has power, which is immediately suspicious. We follow through with Maximus's view. He goes into the door, and then the other door has a handle printed on it, which I thought was hilarious. Yes. It's just like a that printing. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's not a handle. And then he falls in back to Vault 33. Everyone's together. Betty's talking about resettling Vault 32. The song that shows up is "What a Difference a Day Makes" by Dinah Washington. Mm-hmm. This hints at how it was just a day ago that Norm went in there and everything looked messed up. And now all of a sudden Vault 32's nice and pristine. Mostly, not everything's cleaned up, but mostly there's a few little blood splatters here and there. The Overseer's terminal is broken. It's like absolutely busted, not working at all. Betty looms over Norm from behind, says, "Find anything interesting?" And the way this is shot is so ominous because Norm's a little guy, but the camera is below his head. And Betty, who isn't a particularly tall woman, is like towering over her, almost like a death claw creeping up on him. Right. Norm says, "Great job cleaning up." And I love the double in time, like the hidden bits of meaning in this.
Yeah.
Great job cleaning up. Both because he knows what it was actually like, but also he would have naturally been able to assume that there were raiders in here and they must have left a mess, right? And then she covers, "The raiders destroyed so much, but not our spirits."
It's obvious that Betty knows. Betty knows Norm knows something. She just can't quite figure out what it is yet.
Yeah.
And she's trying to figure out what to do with Norm.
Right.
In effect.
Right.
Like, how do I deal with this problem? Because, you know, as we'll discover later, Betty's been around for a bit.
Yes. Yes.
Betty's been around for a bit.
That's
the best way to put it.
Yes.
And so I think that we're going to, but what I liked about the scene though was the flashes though of, you know, the blood spatter, like, you know, the toaster with the fork sticking out
of memories, it. The memories of what it looked like previously. Yeah.
Exactly. And I thought that was really cool because it was this, because the main question is asked is who could clean this fast?
Right. Right. You would have needed like an entire army of people to clean up an entire vault like that in one day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the question that we're asking in this episode is there's no way this could be cleaned up that quickly without like a monument. How is this in any way, shape or form possible?
Right. Right. And Norm doesn't say that, but I think we all know that that's what he's thinking. It's not just, hey, it's mysterious that you cleaned everything up. It's how did this happen so quickly? That's the real, the real question. But then Norm asks about where his mother's Pip-Boy is. And Betty reveals, "I buried her myself, me and your father," which again has this like double meaning. Like it sounds, you could read that as, "We were friends. I loved her. I mourned her death. I was at her funeral." But you could also read this as, "I was there.
I'll bury you too."
Right. Yeah. Like she's gone and I was part of that, you know, like.
Exactly. And that's how I read it in all honesty. I saw it as a, you know, I buried your mom. I'll bury you too.
If you
cross me, for lack of a better phrase.
Right. It feels like the writing in Game of Thrones, like season one or two or three, where there was so much double meaning in all of the dialogue.
Yes.
And it was written so well. That's what this feels like to me.
Yeah, I like that. I very much so agree.
Yeah. All right. So final scene, Lucy and Max are in this new vault and their signs, intake, caution, falling objects. I thought that was hilarious.
Yes. Like
people are just going to fall through the ceiling. So maybe don't stand here. And Lucy says, "We're in the best place in the world. We're in a vault," which again, continues to show how naive she is, you know, like, the vaults aren't the best place in the world necessarily. So, okay.
I mean, it's better than where they just were. But again, obviously the next episode, we'll get into that. We learn a lot more about this vault. This vault has a, I love this vault, by the way. I think this vault is a great homage to the game. The more we learn about it, the funnier the vault gets to me.
Right. Yeah. And we'll be getting into that in the next episode. We've been doing two episodes per episodes, but these episodes are getting more dense with details. So we're going to take them one at a time. And don't worry, I'm going to be releasing these in order to get these out before season two starts, which means that you'll have this episode, you'll have a patron chat next week, then you'll have another episode, and then probably a sooner, like in between the middle of the week, kind of season one, episode eight episode of the show, in order to catch up right before we get the first episode of season two. So you'll be all caught up by the time season two one launches. Yeah. But John, in order to wrap this up, any other final thoughts? Any other thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I think this is where the show really starts to go to develop for us. As we said before, the first few episodes were designed to really set the tone, set the background, get the casual person interested in it. Now we start to go. Now we start to see like all the subterfuge, really all the reasons why we, like, at least if I'm going to say we all, but at least for me, I love playing Fallout.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the vaults are super messed up.
Yeah.
I love that life outside the vault, also super messed up. Right. I love it. That's the whole idea of these post-apocalyptic games. It's like, hey, the apocalypse has happened. How different is the world about to be? Oh,
yeah.
Well, there's to find out.
There's mystery. There's the unknown around every corner. It doesn't matter if it's in a vault or in the wasteland. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's a new group you meet or new individual. You never quite know what to expect. And that's the only thing that you know to expect, is that you don't ever know what to expect. And there's something just genuinely forever appealing about that, right? So, well said. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. I'll be back to thank our patrons in just a minute, so don't go anywhere. And John will be joining me for episode 6. So tune in for that.
Yep.
We'll be back.
See you guys then. Take care.
Thanks again to John for joining me for this episode. It's been so much fun hanging out with him, talking Fallout TV show stuff. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and future events in the TV show, so make sure to comment and let me know what you're thinking. Also, our new show, Retro Recall, is live. You can listen to it on podcast platforms. You can look it up wherever you're listening to this, or you can check out the more, even more involved version on video on YouTube. So Retro Recall, there's links in the description, so go check that out. Also have to shout out our newest patrons, patreon.com/falloutlorecast, Ying Yang Bear, Axel R, Masked Guru, and Michelle L. Thank you for joining us and for supporting the show. Also, shout outs to our sentry bots, Germinator and Dusty Ray. Thank you so much as well. And we got a new rating and review, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you do that, we'll read it out on a future episode. This one is from Lee or something, and that's actually the name, Lee or something. It says, "A lore lover's vault of delight." And Lee or something wrote a little poem. We have, "There once was a host named Tom, whose Fallout lore talk was the bomb. Each tale he explores opens new vault door lores, and my geeky heart's perfectly calm. From games I have played to the rest, he dives deep and explains all the best. With humor and brains and wasteland refrains, this lore cast outshines all the rest." That's so fun. Thank you for putting that together. Also, we've got a patron chat coming up next week, so if you'd like to join us for that, you can sign up on the Patreon. It is one of the higher tiers. You'll see all the different things you get for each tier. And so that means that episode 6 will be the week after that, and then the week after that will be episodes 7 and 8 of the TV show, kind of crammed. I'll drop a bonus episode in that week just to make sure we get through it before season 2 launches, and then we'll get to see the first episode of season 2, and I will definitely be talking about these because they will be rolling out one episode a week, which will give me plenty of time to cover each one on the show. So looking forward to that. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, and I will see you next time. Stay safe out there. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends.
Retro Recall.